build stuff and operate stuff. So the attitude here is very much get it done, no BS, very, very much driven by engineers.
This is a very complicated story.
Interesting. Just write a book.
Yeah. All the people at the Lithium conference this week, thank you so much for being here so we could go on a family vacation that's close to me.
You guys really leaned
into
this.
You really made it happen, Dad.
I would say he is the lithium cathode OG.
Well, you're more than generous.
You're listening to the Global Lithium Podcast.
Welcome to another edition of the Global Lithium Podcast. Today is a Q&A episode in two parts. The first part is about 20 minutes of a two-hour Ask Me Anything call with Daniel Graham of Queenstown, New Zealand. Daniel asked me a lot of great questions. You know, unfortunately, because when I'm doing a one-on-one call, I tend to be much more candid than I would be for public consumption on a podcast. My answers are heavily edited and redacted. Be that as it may, I think there's still some good content. We talk about other battery metals that I look at or don't look at and why. DLE, he asked me if I think we need a breakthrough in extraction technology in order to meet the anticipated rapid growth. And then we have he asked me a personal question, which I heavily edit the answer to, but you may find that interesting. And then we move on to four questions from the new Global Lithium website that were submitted on the contact form. Questions about why some of the biggest lithium companies struggle so much to make battery quality material. Specific question about SQM's woes, question about Standard Lithium's prospects, and then finally, there's a question regarding a recent statement that there's a temporary cathode production cutback in Korea. The listener wants to know why that would be. And with that preamble, let's get on with the podcast.
Hey, if it's all right with you, I'm going to record this, and depending on where we go, it may or may not be in the next podcast. You know, there's just certain things that revealing.
Well, listen, I appreciate your bluntness. I mean, that means you're being honest, you know? Most people couch everything and they try to massage their answers not to offend people, and you don't really get the truth when you do that.
This is a really it's still a small world. I mean, lithium's a lot bigger than it was, but it's still a tiny world.
This episode of the Global Lithium Podcast is sponsored by Zalandez, a brinefield services company providing real-time, actionable data. Zalandez recently saved a major lithium brine producer up to 50% in their drilling costs and increased brine well production rates by as much as 40%. Find out more at Zalandez.com.
We are at an inflection point, and
yeah, I believe that. I think COVID's going to probably slow it down 6 more months, maybe. But what's happened with Tesla? Tesla's a real thing now.
Yeah,
there's no denying. It's not like, well, we'll look at next quarter and see if he makes a dime, and yeah. You know, because that the Tesla cynicism was so great for so long.
It is a game changer. You know, once people realize that the total cost of ownership is so low, you know, we just need to get to that price parity where, you know, an EV costs, a similar amount to a, we are there with the Model 3 and Model Y in their respective.
I don't think that day's far away. And I think with this whole narrative on LFP, I think it's going to change the mid-range. And it will just see.
Having listened to the Nano One podcast, which was, by the way, amazing. I had to listen to it a few times. It really crystallized things for me with the LFP, because I'd heard about CATL's announcement and BYD, and then Tesla choosing LFP for maybe its standard range Model 3.
Yep.
And that to me was quite surprising at the time. I was like, well, LFP just doesn't work.
The problem with a lot of what's written about this industry is a lot of it's written in the United States, and we're probably the last. We have the most range anxiety. We have the cheapest gas. You know, all the things that have to be overcome, we have all of it.
Yeah.
You know, it's just like with me, my biggest concern was, okay, if I'm in North Carolina and any of the places I would drive, like to Buffalo, I'm going through West Virginia, where am I going to get charged?
Yeah.
And, you know, okay, I'm like, if I get the big battery, I only need one charge and I'm sure I can find it somewhere. We're last. So our business press is the most cynical about it. I mean, that's what Musk has been fighting too, is that.
I've got a few questions. My brother gave me questions.
Okay.
So, I'll try and rip through them, you know, and.
Well, if I don't know, I'll just say, I don't know. I'm pretty, I don't claim to be omniscient about lithium. Yeah.
So I guess the first one was lithium is obviously the irreplaceable element, the battery in any battery chemistry, right? So do you, from your perspective, does that make it the safest investable battery metal? Or you never mention anything other than nickel, obviously for high nickel cathode, but do you look at any of the other components, you know, graphite in the anode? Or
when I look at the long-term future, ultimately, I think you're going to have, you will have solid state batteries. That's going to be metallic lithium, whether it's ultra thin foil or whether it's vapor deposition or something like that. I'm not looking at graphite. I'm not an expert on graphite, but I don't see that as being, I don't know enough about it to say where the value is, but I think ultimately that is a Betamax technology.
Yeah.
That, I mean, that's just my feeling on it. Nickel, I mean, the scale of nickel, the scale of, to a lesser extent, cobalt, you know, they're not going to be dominated by battery for a while. So unless you have some knowledge to buy the right player, like, you know, and if you look at what's the ESG pressure going to be on those guys later on, I know lithium, it's comfortable to me. So I'm the wrong person to ask about other metals, but I still think lithium's the best play because you can, you know, look at LFP has a big comeback and gets into even the mid market. There's no cobalt, no nickel in an LFP battery. No, you know, the only common thing is lithium.
Just on you mentioned lithium metal. How is that extracted? Is that
right now the technology is it's lithium chloride that's used as the lithium source to get lithium metal. And if you look at the two people that are best positioned there, Livent has the lowest cost position. They make chloride directly in Argentina from the brine. And Ganfeng's got the biggest metal capacity. But there are small startups that are trying to do different kind of technology. That may be 20 years later, I don't know. But in the near term, assuming the real holy grail is getting the thinnest possible foil, that's where Ganfeng again comes in, as they already have by far the most metal capacity. Well, if you listen to the Solid Power podcast with Dean Frankel, they're still pretty far away.
Yeah.
That's not going to be on the podcast. No, if you go back to the early days, that's the interesting thing about the whole overnight success bit. It always takes 20 years to be an overnight success. It's kind of what you're seeing with Tesla. That's the energy density. That if you go back to the first lithium battery you had in a cell phone, it was nothing like what you have today. And that's what you're seeing with cars.
And you'll see that continue to progress.
Yeah, well, that's why lithium is the best. To get back to your original question, that's why lithium is the best raw material category, because right now it's already too late to have 10% EV penetration in 2025.
Yeah.
Because nobody's been investing the last 2 years. I mean, even the big guys, except for Gangfen, everybody else has pulled back. Albemarle's pulled back. Tianqi shut their, you know, Tianqi's done it because of money as much as anything else. And SQM is a combination of failure to execute because of the time it takes to bring lithium online. I mean, that's why I love to listen to the CRU guys and the Morgan Stanley guys, because they really have no clue, because they don't differentiate. Yeah. It's all LCEs to them. You can't make a good battery with crappy raw materials. And that's the other thing that I will talk about on this Q&A about clarification, is that LFP may be a little more forgiving on raw material, but it's still got to be battery quality if they're going to go to the high end. Where the lousy raw materials were employed was in the cheap cars. You know, Tesla's not going to take batteries and say, oh yeah, send us 100 and we'll pick out the best 60 and then you can take the other 40 back. That's the way BYD started. Yeah. When I started doing business with BYD in 2000, 20 years ago.
Yeah.
And their whole business model was, we just make as many as we can. And they invested in testing equipment, not in good technology, but they could tell on the cycle tests which were good batteries. And they went to Motorola and Nokia. Have you seen a Motorola or a Nokia phone lately? That was a crappy model. The phone guys went out. BYD moved on and figured out they had to have a different model and make good product.
So one thing was, do you believe that we're going to need a breakthrough in lithium extraction technology? I mean, everybody talked, like we've talked about, or you've talked about DLE and mentioned lithium. And is it necessary, or can we just harvest enough hard rock?
Compare and contrast the both sides of the Andes. If you look at Chile, that's a very sensitive ecosystem. They have tourism. They have a lot of stakeholders that didn't really appreciate SQM. Their lithium and any kind of extractive business is behind the eight ball. Plus, you know, the question of, can you drink brine? And you have to look at every resource independently. There is not, you can't broad brush brine, you can't broad brush hard rock. So if it doesn't matter if it's reality, it matters when people protest and shut down the road to your operation. But it is having a real effect potentially. There's enough lithium in the Atacama to do 400,000 or 500,000 tons a year. But
yeah,
when you take everything into consideration, it's probably closer to 2. And that you go to the Puna in Argentina, it's a delicate environment from the fact that nothing grows up there. Water's an issue.
Well, while we're talking about Argentina, is it correct to say that the Lithium Americas project with the joint venture with Gangfen, is that the first brine operation that's developed specifically to produce high quality battery grade lithium?
Well,
I know you've talked about this sort of in the past.
That's a great question. Lack as guys who have done it before, or Cobra didn't have anybody who had done it before.
Now, you always harp on about the teams, right?
Harp on? Did you say I harp on?
Yes.
Yeah. Sorry. Okay. No, that's fine. That's fine. I just want to know what I'm dealing with.
The team is the most important thing, right?
I mean, well, there's a caveat to that, though. I always say it's assuming you have a reasonable resource.
Yeah.
And I mean, a great team can't go to Qinghai and make that project sing.
Yeah.
You know, they might make it operate, but I mean, you have to have at least a middling resource. But even if you have a great resource and you got a lousy team, you're going to have trouble. That's my point. I get asked a lot about the other projects in Argentina. And Hombre Muerto, I have no doubt, can double their capacity. It's a matter of money and doing it. It's a conundrum. And that goes back to, if lithium at 300,000 roughly tons last year, and okay, say this year's a write-off and it's flat, but then you go back on the climb, and you get to 850,000 to a million by 2025, which really means 2024 from a produce the lithium standpoint. Where's that going to come from? I mean, you can take every bit of spodumene that Australians can produce right now, throw in Wojina, and take every bit that's going to come out of South America, and you don't get there. So that's what mystifies me, because it's too late. I mean, LAC will be fully ramped up. Okay, that's one more resource. But when you need 600,000 tons, a couple of 40,000 ton projects don't really get it done. And you can say all you want about, you know, you can take Morgan Stanley's list. And that's what I did last year at presentations. I took their list that was only 6 months old and said, when they did this list, this project had already gone defunct. When they did this list, this project had already gone defunct. Mm-hmm. Nemaska? I don't think so. You know, I just all the way.
It's still my thesis that there has not been enough investment in the past few years to meet the supply demands when the uptick in EV demand comes in the next few years. So I am sticking with that story, and that's why I believe that we're coming into a period where there'll be a price spike and that lithium will be the limiting factor on the EV market.
How do we get
that? You're going to have a 2-year period or so where people that want to buy an EV go on a wait list that goes 18 months. I mean, that's where you are.
Oh, yeah. Well, going back to that, going back over where are we going to get this lithium, Thacker Pass, right? There's all kinds of rumors swirling about that, right? Tesla buying Thacker Pass. I'm convinced Tesla is not going to be dictated by the market. They're going to be masters of their own destiny. In fact, they use that, J.B. Straubel used those very words, right? We are going to be masters of our own destiny. JV with somebody or...
When asked about my experience with Tesla and lithium resources, I told Daniel some stories about the abortive attempt of Tesla to buy Symbol and my involvement with that. I told him that I believe that rumors will continue to abound about Tesla. I don't put a lot of credence in specific rumors that he heard with regards to any specific asset. And so we'll move on from there. We went back into a discussion of DLE, which is where we will pick it up here. Daniel asked me about DLE. I maintain my position is that if an operation that has ponds where there's up to a 6-month residence time, like Livent has, is not really DLE, but you know, we can agree to disagree on that. However, when he asked me specifically about the viability of DLE, you know, I remain open that it could be developed in the future. I do consider what Standard's doing kind of a special situation, and I think they have the best chance of proving out a DLE in the near term, but that's background of how we continue in this section.
It's really easy to do DLE on the whiteboard. They've been doing it on the whiteboard for about 15 years, still not commercial. And if DLE works, and it could, it will not change the existing operations. I think to do the 2025, you're really looking at conventional technology, hard rock, the way hard rock's done now, brine, LAC's not doing DLE, LAC's expansion won't be DLE.
Sure. It's a personal question, you know.
Yep.
You and your wife seem to have done a good job raising your daughters, you know, they're successful and confident.
Yeah, they don't lack confidence. Yeah.
But, you know, I've got three young kids and I'm just wondering if you have, you know.
Well, I mean, my kids are 31 and 28. It was a little different world. But even when my kids were little, their friends played video games a lot. My kids didn't play video games. My kids didn't watch much TV. They read a lot. They wrote stories. They acted out plays they wrote. Yeah. But we read every night. I had a book about this thick called The Book of Virtues. I read that, or I made up stories. I think the best thing we ever did, and you guys you've moved around the world. I mean, when we lived overseas, especially when we lived in China, I think it either makes your family get closer or there's problems. With us, it tended to coalesce us. And then I don't know, if you go read my daughter's blog someday when you don't have anything to do, brokemillennial.com, or, you know, first book. I mean, they really talk about, they started making money when they were very young. I mean, they were in some commercials and stuff. And I always made them pay for half of what they got. And, you know, I said that from the beginning. I said, look, they go, I want that. I said, okay, that's $12. I said, I'll buy it right now. But when I get home, $6 is coming out of your piggy bank. They
didn't eat it.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, but I never thought that had impact on them. It really didn't. And then when my daughter moved to New York and was paying her own bills, and she started this whole thing, all that stuff, people viewed it as her talking shit about me when she started her blog. But, and she wrote, when she wrote her first book, that, you know, some people will write to her and say, your dad was a dick. And she says, no, my father did me the biggest favor. Yeah. He made me understand value. And he didn't, I mean, we always supported it. And, you know, I told him, I said, you can go to college. I will pay for any college you want to go to. But if you get a scholarship to an equivalent college and you say, no, I just want to go to the other one, mm-hmm. I'll pay for everything, but you're signing a note that says you're paying me back for half of it.
Yeah. I mean, similar as well.
But I think it's just values and consistency. And even now, I mean, I spend a lot of time, but when I travel, if I go to New York, I have dinner with my daughter. Every time I go to Asia, I stop in LA and see my daughter. And too many people don't spend time. And what we did, I'll tell you one other thing we did when we lived in Japan and when we lived in China, our house was ground zero. I mean, I had one time I had on a Saturday, the international school, I had like 12 languages being spoken in my apartment. If you make your house attractive to, you know, because I played basketball with the kids who were the boy, and that was, they were always astounding. I mean, these kids, kid was 6'3", he's in eighth grade, he was from Germany. He goes, Mr. Lowry, you know, like, you know, you old man. But I beat him like, you want me to beat you 20-2, or would you rather get beat 20-18? I mean, it's your choice. And he was like, ah, ha, ha, ha. And it was just funny, because if you, the more a part of the life you are.
Yeah.
And then it made my daughters proud too. No, but I was traveling 130 days a year back then. I never missed a play. I always was able to arrange travel around that. And my kids still talk about it. I did a podcast with my kids.
Yeah.
And as I said, I always used to fall asleep, but I was always there.
But I wanted to just thank you, you know, for everything you've done over the last, I mean, you've been doing this podcast for years now, right? 3 years, maybe?
It's two and a half. I mean, I did a lot of episodes. I thought I'd do 12 the first year, and we did like 25 or 30, and
but no, I have to say, you know, and I think all of your listeners would agree, you know, it's been invaluable for you to spend your time and to do this free of charge, you know,
I feel I was very lucky. Anyway, good to talk to you. Happy birthday to your 10-year-old. And
yeah, and have a great 4th of July tomorrow.
We would like to thank our sponsor, Zolandez, who prides itself on providing a new way of doing things in the lithium brine space. Recently, a junior lithium explorer in Argentina was able to save up to 20% in their exploration costs through the use of Zolandez technology services. To learn more, visit Zolandez.com. That's Zolandez.com. Welcome to part two of this Q&A podcast. I am recording this on the morning of July 6th. I had several questions come in. I won't get to them all. The first one is from an F. Gomez, who apparently follows SQM as a company in his job, and he's struggling to understand the quality issues and when were they known. Was this something that was always present or recent? I'm paraphrasing a little here because it's a rather lengthy question. So it's a good topic. First of all, I just want to say that just because recently I've been a little bit hard on SQM, I still think that all of the major lithium companies need to perform
and I am hoping that SQM performs better. But I've been pretty candid about the fact that from my perspective as a former competitor of SQM and somebody who's known them since they started in this business, that for most of the time SQM has produced lithium in the Atacama, it was a byproduct. It was treated like a byproduct. It was marketed like a byproduct. And the relationship they had with the battery industry was always a little bit handicapped because of that, because they honestly didn't put enough emphasis on their quality. Once they started making lithium hydroxide, that was well known in the industry to be a substandard product compared to the other two big three players at the time, particularly versus FMC's product. I competed with them. I know the customers. I had a lot of conversations about the poor quality of SQM's hydroxide. I don't believe it's markedly better than it now than it was then. So they've always had a hydroxide problem. But they could sell their hydroxide to the grease industry, although because of caking issues, it also had a lot of complaints in the grease industry. But it was really in the no-go zone as far as battery went until there was an LFP process that did not require at the time the quality that, say, a Livent made. And then later on, it was started to be used in Korea. But in that scenario, the product was actually upgraded in Korea. So it wasn't that SQM had suddenly started to make a battery grade. It was more about they were low enough, had a low enough price point where the customers would take on the job of upgrading it themselves as required. When we talk about the more significant volume product of lithium carbonate, the story is a little different and very similar to the other plants that were really designed and put into process before the lithium-ion battery industry was of any importance and certainly was on the radar of the lithium companies. You know, SQM's process was really designed to make a product suitable for industrial use, and it is suitable for industrial use. But like the other producers, when the battery industry started and got more and more stringent on their quality requirements, it goes back 20 years, and as the requests for higher quality were made, and I had this experience while I was at FMC Lithium, now Livent, we lot selected, and everybody lot selected. So we made a certain amount of product that could meet the specs, and the specs then weren't as stringent as they are now. And it's what I call now the last mile problem. It's the 0.5% that I keep talking about that is the important part in battery grade, not the 99.5, it's the 0.5. And what's in that? And it's not that easy to just adapt your process on the fly and get down to the very stringent levels of different analytes that are critical to the battery makers. So what we have seen, there are a couple of different problems from my perspective. One is that SQM did their expansion. They created some self-inflicted quality problems, but they always had the issue that was staring them in the face that when the battery market became more than half the demand, they were going to struggle. It always worked in the 90s and the 2000s and most of the last decade that battery demand was less than half. The lithium market, lot selection worked. What wasn't battery quality, there was an ample market for. But as you expand and as the battery industry becomes a higher percentage, about 60% last year, going to 85 to 90% in the middle of this decade, your process has to be better. SQM's as much as admitted it. Albemarle with Lanegra 2 was trying to do a battery quality expansion that they struggled with also. So this isn't just an SQM problem. This is an industry problem. And that's why somebody like a Lithium Americas in the design of Cauchari has taken all these things into consideration. But the legacy plants don't have that luxury. And they've
struggled mightily to make the quality. So this is not a new issue. This isn't something that just came up, but as battery becomes more and more important, this is something that has a bigger impact. As far as the pricing situation goes with an SQM, I mean, you can see that obviously with their lower quality product now, they're getting a much, much lower yield, about half per LCE, because they're having to go to China and compete against the Qinghai product, the Orocobre product. I think that what you're going to see in further expansions by SQM, they absolutely have to up their game. They absolutely have to put the processes in to get to a very 0.5% that has low levels of the offensive analytes to the battery maker and also low metallic contamination. Nando, hopefully that helps. If not, you can rephrase your question or more nuance it and submit it again on the globallithium.net website. We're going to move on to a related question that has to do with why all the lithium producers seem to struggle. And the way the question was phrased is, why do Albemarle, Livent, SQM, and Orocobre struggle with battery grade? So I wanted to acknowledge that question was asked, but the answer is literally the same, except in the case of Orocobre, which was certainly a plant that was designed after the lithium battery industry was a big deal. The other players are producing from plants that were really designed and put into production before we had this kind of huge battery market that demanded higher and higher quality. In the case of Orocobre, I think it was just a situation where you had a new player in the industry not really understanding the requirements and then thinking that bicarbonation at the end would solve all their evils. I've talked about this before on Q&A, so I'm not going to belabor that. But I just did want to acknowledge to the person who asked the broader question that I read it, I'm responding. And then there's one more nuance to this, because the end of that question was, will the growth of LFP or a rise in demand of LFP based on CATL and BYD's new battery pack designs, will that make it easier for these companies to sell carbonate to the battery industry? Basically saying that, can LFP have a lower specification? Does LFP have a lower specification? And really the genesis of that question is, during the shortage, Qinghai material that was low quality was used at the very low end of the LFP market in China. It was well chronicled, but this was not anything that the customers of the cathode wanted or even signed off on in many cases. So you had a situation where low-end material was used because high-end material could not be secured. And the narrative kind of came out, and I've said it, I've been guilty of saying it myself, is because in a sense it's true that the LFP process might be a little more forgiving. But as you know, I said earlier on the podcast, I believe that this wasn't non-battery quality. And what's happening in the future as we continue to get a higher and higher percentage of demand into the EV sector, the quality requirements just keep getting tougher. LFP is going to demand a carbonate that's equivalent to what the other cathodes require. And there's also just a situation where, when needed, there will always be some less scrupulous cathode makers that try to get away with using lower quality and cheaper raw materials. But trust me, these are not the kind of companies that are going to get qualified by a tier one battery maker or a Tesla. The future isn't low quality material, particularly the low end that an SQM is making now. Their lower quality product is not just going to be able to be used in LFP that goes into a Tesla. So hopefully that's helpful. The next question was from an engineer from Arkansas named Brad, who is interested in Standard Lithium. and wants to know what the current outlook is in terms of production and stock price. Brad, I do not give stock price projections on the podcast, so I'm not going to discuss that. And I did contact Standard on this to see if they had any late-breaking updates to give me. I mean, honestly, they did a podcast with me less than a month ago. I would direct you to that. I've already said on this podcast that I believe that Standard has a good chance of being the first company to employ direct lithium extraction in their special situation project. And I call it special situation because it's a commercial bromine production stream being used. The economics work. It's great for Standard. It's great for LANXESS if they can pull this off. And just to be give an editorial comment, I'm a big fan of the state of Arkansas, and I am very much hopeful they succeed, but the jury is still out until commercial production commences. One final comment in this area is that even a success by Standard doesn't validate that DLE is going to work in other places where it's being implemented. And that I am not against DLE in any manner, shape, or form, but the fact is that every project is different, and the implementation of DLE isn't cut and paste, as Carlos Galli likes to say. You have to have a customized design for every situation. So what works in Arkansas isn't necessarily going to work in the Pune or in Shanghai province. It doesn't mean there won't be future DLE successes in those kind of environments. It's just I'm one of those people who in this case isn't from Arkansas. I'm from the show me state of Missouri, and I want to see it commercialized rather than have people just declare victory and say how bad the existing technology is. You know, I've never been one that appreciated people trying to elevate themselves by tearing the people they compete with down. And unfortunately, I think a lot of the rhetoric in hyping DLE has been saying how bad conventional technology is. And I'm just not a fan of that kind of marketing. Okay, I'm going to do one more question real quick. This one is from @Glucksberg1. Sorry, I don't speak German, and clearly my pronunciation indicates that. And this came actually via Twitter, asking me to comment on a tweet regarding Korean cathode production cutbacks recently, and stating that with European incentives for EVs rising, shouldn't the material be starting to move now? And, you know, I don't want to overblow what happened in Korea. I think it was just, it was a comment. I got a report. I reported it to you on Twitter that there were, and I wouldn't classify it as a broad shutdown. I believe one plant shut down for 30 days and the other producers had kind of scaled back their rate. And I think it was, you know, mostly a supply chain issue and managing inventories. I don't think it says anything about 2021 demand at this point. I think that, you know, the COVID situation has kind of rolled through the supply chain, different areas at different speed. And I just wouldn't make too much of this. We'll continue to follow it. And if I think it's noteworthy to talk about at a later date, I will do so. And with that, this has been a pretty long Q&A. I'm going to thank you for listening. I'm going to tell you that I do now have a Global Lithium website. That's globallithium.net, not .com. And thank you very much for listening. And don't let your memories be greater than your dreams.